Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a minor reminder, join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshoe.com, search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, just be free to just follow me on Twitter, you know, sfuoncall, sfuoncall. And of course, my personal account, Paul Franz, is a reminder that if you follow me, I am happy, I'm very thrilled about being Catholic, rooting for my O's, and of course, all kinds of tech talk. Just a reminder. And also, one other reminder, which I forgot to mention earlier, which is, of course, this podcast is also co-broadcast onto the Twitch TV network. So at 9:30, after that, 9:35, you'll probably find the stream going, and that I will be there. It's at twitch.tv/sfuoncall, and I will find you and watch the chat room and be able to try to respond as quickly as I can. And of course, this lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B. Of course, they've been working on Caps Log number 54. Then the title of that one is The Return of the Darwin, which means it's bad news for the Andromedans. And also, looks like Jean said she's doing a happy dance because her space tarantula is getting rules in its own scenario in Caps Log number 54. So keep an eye out for that in the new Caps Log, which should be showing up in the next couple weeks. And of course, in the past couple weeks, actually, it was announced on the September 2nd. You probably heard us talk about it last week, which was, of course, the ADB's release on Shapeways. There were a total of 46 new items added there, which makes it that they have nearly 2,300 different items available on total. Something that it would never be possible without Shapeways. So thanks, Shapeways, for creating such a wonderful site and giving opportunity to A to B to actually be able to create miniatures that they would never, ever been able to do before. Moving on to the SWB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star Tournament 6. Signups are still open. 14 slots have been filled with only 2 slots left. Now, a reminder, we have the updated Andromedan. We have the updated Fed, i.e. it gets that Gorn rack that everyone's saying it needs. So you got it, guys. You asked for it. You got it. And, of course, the Vudar ship is now official. So it's officially part of the Radius Tournament. If you want to, you can actually play it, too. It is on the drop-down for sign-up. So come on, sign up. It's only $10. And all you have to do is win the first round, and you get $10 back. Wow. You know, and if you don't, it's only $10. You know, it's 2 Starbucks, or maybe 1.5 Starbucks. So it's nothing. Come on. When it comes to the FedCom library, not much progress there. Actually, no progress at all. Partly that's my own fault, and I apologize for that. I will send out some more ships out this weekend, I promise. And so stuck at squadron size ships are 377. The fleet size ships at 278. With that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, it's, well, me. Barry's not here. Gary's not here. Well, you never know about Gary. He might show up late. But doesn't matter. The important thing is I am here. We started the podcast. And welcome anyone who wants to watch or listen to my melodious voice. I welcome you. Tonight, actually, I'm going to do something which I've been working on. I got some pieces. I got a little bit of pieces started. Obviously, it's not completed or anything like that, but that's why I titled this one Ideas for a Web-Based Client. Because anyone's actually read the captain's logs, which I hope you have, because Lord knows the captain's logs are a wonderful item to get, a wonderful item to read, especially the stories and the different ships that are made available. Some of the articles are wonderful. Mine are more like update articles that tell you what's going on. Now, the one thing that I've posted in many of the SFB Online and Starfleet Warlord articles as of late, is the whole idea of web-based clients. Because I'm not sure about you, but I've kind of noticed things, and I've been noticing this actually for years, which is everything wants to be web-based, i.e. the web, the browser as the UI. Now, I understand that in certain cases, that's not a good thing. For example, you know, I don't think you could actually play like Fortnite or Doom. Doom you might be able to do. Because Lord knows, you know, the web browser have become very powerful. And actually some of those capabilities that are in that, I'm not sure what body is making available or saying, oh, we should add this to a browser. We should add this to a browser. And the problem is I see that and go, no, that's not what browsers are for. Because what's the biggest issue with the browser? Security speaking, I'm just going to mention this real quick. And that is the browser is one of the few places where you can download a program, unbeknownst to you, into your computer, and you don't know if it's malicious or non-malicious. You don't know. Just to let you know about that. And the problem is that they want more and more capabilities added onto the browser. So the browser is no longer just a browser. They want, in some cases, Lord knows, Google's one of them, wants the browser to become the OS. The thing that you develop for. And that's the thing that has all the capabilities. It can have access to Bluetooth and all the hardware parts. But the thing is, do you really want that? In my mind, you don't really want everything to be available to the browser. You want to limit it. And the whole idea of a browser, and Lord knows, even Java, the idea is that Java can be sandboxed. Most of the time when you're downloading it, you know, it's not sandboxed. The whole idea of applets back in the day was that you could sandbox that, you know, you could sandbox what was happening. You know, you could have it so that the Java applet could only do so much. It couldn't write things to the hard disk. It couldn't do this, couldn't do that. And that's kind of what the whole idea behind the Mac App Store and the entitlements that you do for that, so that you can have it so that an application is limited and what the capabilities that are given to it. Just like actually for iOS apps, you know, the whole idea is that you have to tell them, okay, this is why I need this entitlement, and this is why I need the capability to do this or have access to this API or whatever. For example, you know, I'm sure some of you have seen with iOS the whole idea of, you know, that you upgrade to iOS 13, all of a sudden you have an app which has no right to asking you for Bluetooth. It's like, why? Because they were tracking you. That's why. But anyway, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going off the deep end there. But anyway, the web browser as the UI, what's the wonderful part about the web browser as the UI? The wonderful part about the web browser as the UI is I can have it, or any developer can have it, so that their application, I'm providing a service. SFB Online, Starfleet Warlord, that is a service to allow you to play a game. That's what it is. That's what everyone pays me, you know, when it comes to SLB Online, that's what they pay me for. For that, they pay me to give them for a subscription so that they can play SLB across the internet against people in a live context. That's what people pay me for. They have the ability to do that, to have the support within that client, within that service, to play SFB. Now, there's some people that would like more. Some people would like to have an AI. Now, let's be honest. You know how complicated that AI would be? It would take me another 5 to 10 years probably to create an AI that could actually play SFB by all of the SFB rules. Now, if we want to have it so it kind of limits itself to basic rules, it might be doable, but you know, still, having an AI can actually play a game like that is not exactly easy. Ask anyone who's created an AI, computer-based player, basically. It's not easy, you know. Even going way back originally. Well, actually, chess is actually relatively easy because it's a whole min-max problem, which is the computer can actually go through all the different possible combination permutations of moves. I move here, you have the possibility to move here, and here. And, you know, you can have it, obviously, you can have it so that it does it intelligently, so that it can then, at that point, you know, limit the number of moves that it's going to actually to evaluate. That's why in some cases when you do a dumb move, the computer goes, I don't know what to happen. I don't know what to do. How in the world, you know, because to be honest, come on, it's like any other game, chess or SFB, because I've heard of many really good players, they get tripped up by someone who does a dumb move. They don't really, they're thinking that, unfortunately, they get in this mindset that player is just, they're doing something which is just so strange. That like, what are they doing? I don't know what they're doing. You know, why did they do that? They did that because they were dumb. Not because they had this super secret plan which you can't figure out. It's because they were dumb. You know? And that just completely, utterly messes them up. So, you know, that's what happens with some of that way, you know. And so AI, at the moment, I'm putting it to the side. I really like to, at the very least, create, I'm not sure if you've ever seen it. There's some rules for a robot player for the FedCom. And I actually have a copy of those rules. It definitely needs some improvement, but that's one of the things that to me, FedCom, writing up a computer opponent is actually doable. Heck, a lot more doable than SFB, especially given the complexities of the movement and interactions of SFB itself. Because when do you tractor somebody? You don't. Normally, you tractor somebody, you know, I mean, as an offensive thing to have it so they don't run away. Now, when can you have a computer opponent say, oh, I want a tractor? Most of the time, a computer opponent is for SFB. The only reason they're going to use a tractor is to provide a certain tactic. That tactic is you've got too many drones and not enough phasers to kill all the drones. So you tractor some of them, or if you can't, there's no way of guaranteeing the kills on those drones, then you have to tractor one or two. The whole idea is to make sure that you don't get killed, you know. So you just have to that is a tactic that a player can invoke. So anyway, and getting back to the web based, sorry, I'm chasing these rabbits, and I apologize for those of you that are listening or watching at the moment. I apologize. But moving onward, another great thing about a web-based client is the whole issue of what's happening today. A great example of that, of what's happening, is that I changed the way I package the Windows version of the Java-based client. And now I've got how many people now? Jeez, I've had at least 3 or 4, maybe even 5. I know definitely 3 or 4 players say, I can't install the latest client. And it's all because of their antivirus. All of a sudden, their antivirus thinks that my client, because I repackaged it, my guess is because I'm using a different JVM. I'm not using Oracle's JVM because of I don't want to be required to have a license from them. Because the latest JVM requires you, there's a total change in the licensing of it, so that actually you'd have to purchase a support plan of it. I'm not exactly sure how much that would cost me. Probably cost me more than I could actually ever ever have people pay for playing SFB Online. So, you know, I changed it to use the, it's called Open JDK. So it's the open JDK, because the commercial ones, the commercial grade ones from Oracle, those, that there are certain features that are only available for Oracle, and those features I don't need. They're special, you know, features about that you hook into the JVM and all that kind of thing. It's like, I don't need that for a client. Those are only good in my mind if you're going to actually make it available on a server. In that case, you know, and you want to have those special tools available to you. I personally don't care. You know, I've not had that. That's mainly from my mind the enterprise wide servers, the ones that the big hefty ones, you know. But anyhow, so that's one of the issues I ran into. So if I had a web-based client, now instead of having to worry about antivirus, I just have people use their browser. Now obviously, I will be running into other issues. You know, I trade one issue for another issue. And one of those issues, of course, with web browsers is that not all the web browsers are the same. Dun, da, da, big surprise. You know, you've got your Chrome browser, you got your Chromium-based browser, which might be a couple of versions behind when it comes to Chrome, you know, compatibility with Chrome. You've got your Safari browser, you've got your Firefox browser, you know, and that's about it at the moment, really. Because you got Safari, which is based on a rendering engine called WebKit. You've got Firefox, whose rendering engine is based off of, I'm not sure if it's still called Gecko or not. I know previously it was Gecko. I think they redid it, but I'm not sure they still call it Gecko or they renamed it to a new name. And I'm sure there's someone out there screaming that knows about this tech stuff and is just screaming at me at the moment. And I apologize for that. But given that, you know, so the question is going to be, you know, can I write a web-based client that is compatible with all these different browsers? Because unfortunately, they all do things differently, just a little bit differently. Even with HTML5, there are some differences. Now, I'm hoping with what I'm doing with the web-based client that I'm developing, you know, I've done some of the pieces. I know I've got a long ways to do just to make available the minimum functionality that I think is necessary to play SFB Online. You know, impulse chart, the ability to launch drones, add ships to the board, you know, have it so that you can do speed plots, do the energy allocation, do all these things that are the minimum that are for SFB Online. Now, you know, right now I've been focusing on SFB. The question is, can I make it available? Could I, you know, if I decide that instead of focusing on SFB, focus on FedCom, would that be a better approach? Maybe. That might be a better approach is work on FedCom, but I start with SFB, and that's the way I'm going to go, you know. I'm hoping at some time, maybe by the end of this year, I might be able to have something that's available to people to play. There's certain things, that obviously, that I can drop initially. For example, things I could easily drop, chat room. I can remove the chat and just ask people to use a separate chat client. That's one way of doing it. Obviously, currently people relying on the integrated chat. I could add chat. It shouldn't be that difficult to do. You know, it just means I have to recreate the back end. The question is, do I keep the current back end, or do I, when it comes to chat and all that, or do I implement my own, you know, chat room kind of functionality? Don't know. I have to wait and see. I might, because there's certain things that I could do if I implemented my own chat. For example, I could keep a full log of the entire game on the server. Currently, I don't do that, but I could do that if I implemented my own chat. And, you know, so, and of course, given web-based clients, all games would be saved on the server. Which currently you actually can do in the client. You have the ability to save it online. I give everyone the ability to save up to 10 games as part of their account. Do people use it? I have not checked. And actually, that's one thing I really should do, is double check to see if that is working. Because I added that way back in the day for Carl Magnus. Boy, it's been a while since I said that name. And the original reason that he wanted it was because he was playing at internet cafes. And so he couldn't save anything on the local computer. So you could actually install the program. Then, of course, I'm assuming afterwards it would be completely wiped out. But, you know, he could then save it online, save his game, and then come back later on and load the game and continue playing, which is a wonderful thing. As I said, I'm not sure how many people currently are actually doing that, but we'll just have to, I really need to check to see if that still works. So part of the web-based client, I would say, is some of the basic functionality. That's needed. Some of that functionality, for example, I'll show you a little something that I've done. This is an impulse chart. I did some really basic functionality, which is the ability to specify a speed plot. It's really basic. In other words, if I start with 20, it says, okay, you're 20 all the way down. Obviously, these color can easily be changed because it's the web, and you just need to change your style sheet. So you can specify the colors to be whatever you want it to be. But, you know, go here. Okay, now as of impulse 12, I'm going to move this to 22 and then go all the way up here to 21. Actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, I can do that. I was just wondering if it was, now, note, there's nothing here about, it doesn't record your speed plot. There's nothing here that tells you, oh, is that a valid speed plot or not? You know, it's the basic functionality first, which is get it so that you can click on a cell, you know, click on one of the boxes, just like you could do in the online client, and then that's going to be the speed from there to the end of the turn. And then you can go up or down, you know, you can change that to go here, and then maybe all the way up here. Yeah, that's valid because it's double. But anyway, but you know, the whole idea is to show that you can actually do a speed plot. And after, you know, obviously there's some more functionality that I'd need to add if I was going to use this for a speed plot. For, you know, how the question would be, how would this impulse chart be used? Because obviously one thing I'd probably have to do is do what I did with the online client, which is the current impulse would have to be highlighted. Now, that's when this impulse chart is used for tracking changes, the tracking the speeds. And even then, it's one of those things that if you think about it, when it comes to the impulse chart, how often do you look at the impulse chart? I know when I'm playing a game, I rarely look at the impulse chart. Every once in a while, I look at the impulse chart. Here's the reason why. Because I want to see, okay, I know what speeds my opponent is currently going at. Whether it's going at 27 or 19 or whatever. And then I go, okay, we're currently at impulse, let's say impulse 10. I know he's moving speed 19. Oh, he gets to move next impulse. I'm moving speed 20. I don't move. You know, I can look ahead on the impulses to see when he moves, when I don't move. That's the only time that I've ever used the impulse chart. Because obviously I've used the impulse chart for speed plots, which is the way it's being used here. Now, most of the time in an online client, what you see here, what you see as part of the client is you just see a strip. No impulse, there's no impulse specified. It just tells you, gives this, it's basically this line up here, which is, that's the line for speeds. And what's currently highlighted for that line is the current speeds that are active. You know, what are the current actively used speeds? And that, so then you know whether, because obviously that stuff gets announced when you go into the next impulse. It announces, okay, these ships are moving, and here's the speeds. Bum, 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 bum. Now, and then in that bar in the client, you'll see that. Actually, let's see. Why do this? Don't mind me. I've got lots and lots of. It is how I run the client, and when I'm actually developing. Okay, don't tell them my password. Okay, let's bring that up. I'm just bringing up in. Let's just bring up room. I'm not even online, so. If you're online at the moment, you won't see me. Online, it's a bit online, you won't see me. So, sorry if you're looking for that. But if you notice here, as part of, I call this the game control. This is a nice window with, here's the speed bar, which tells people what is the current actively moving speeds. You know, we'll chat here. And then you can do add and you remove. And of course there's filters, you know. That's one thing I think I announced it last week, or I think it was last week, that I added a little filter here. Show only unmoved units, which is beautiful because then you can have it so that this list becomes only the list of ships that you have not moved, which is good when you have a large number of ships. And then, of course, you have a way of controlling. You have whatever you have selected here. You can right, left, side slip, head backwards, basically. All this stuff. Now, the question comes into being, with a web-based client, how much of this stuff do I do? Because with a web-based client, it's a total redo. Total redo. There's some elements which no matter what are going to be required. And the tough part is going to be defining what's called the minimum viable product. If anyone is in software development, knows about the whole idea of a minimum viable product. If they don't, they've not been developing for the past 5 years. Because that's one of the things when it comes to VCs. VCs want you to first produce the minimum viable product. And the reason why usually you try to create a minimum viable product is this. Minimum viable product means what's the minimum amount of functionality that you need to for the what the program is designed to do. Now, the reason why you do a minimum viable product, you don't just add features and add features and add features, is because of one, the idea is to get to the market as quickly as possible. Two, the minimum viable product allows you to then, if the audience, points out, okay, you're missing this functionality, you can easily add without possibly having to rip out some stuff you just did and therefore take it even longer to fix, or you realize, it also makes you easily be able to pivot is the term. And to pivot, it means change direction. If there's you make a minimum viable product and then you realize your clients, the customers, they're only using this little piece, and this little piece seems to be the main focus. I was going to try and give an example, but I can't off the top of my head. But, for example, if I do this, and I notice that, I create chat, but no one's chatting, in the client, in the, as part of the web-based client. Guess what? Might as well just remove it. Because obviously people are going to be communicating. The question is, if they're not using the web-based client to communicate, what are they doing? They're using some other one. Whether it's they're using Discord, like right here, or they're using some other method. That could be Discord, could be Skype, could be Teams, could be Zoom. I thought it was Zoom, but actually it might be Zoom, because you can chat there, you can talk, and same for Discord, same way. You can chat, you can talk, you can do whatever you want, and you have as a group thing. You can do TeamSpeak, you can do all these kind of ways of communicating in a room and have so people can do that. Now obviously there's a big hurdle for using a separate client, but that's not the point here. The point is that looking at what people use and then modifying the and focusing and improving the product based on the feedback that you get from the minimum viable product. So in this case, my job at the moment is to figure out what is the minimum viable product, what is required of all the things that are part of SAP Online Client, what can be removed, what can be dropped. For example, one of the things that is not required in the minimum viable product is, of course, the ability to change the colors. That is not part of the minimum viable product in my mind. It's nice to have, and please don't shoot me. The only people that really care about the coloration in my mind, other than obviously there's some people that do, just because they like certain colors, and they like a certain color scheme, and that's fine. I enjoy what you can do with an online client. Obviously, I'm not tracking you, so I don't know if you're doing that or not, though. I've got to say that I've seen some screenshots where some people have that is the one thing that I would love to have input on, because Lord knows I have seen multiple screenshots. Some of them are really weird when it comes to the way people lay out their boards. Lay out things like, in some cases, some people don't use this game control at all. They just close it. Because I'm thinking of a Les LeBlanc way back when. And then what would happen is that he would have the board, and right on the side of the board, he has his chat area. Me, I would drive me nuts, because I like my words to be all the way across it. What happens when you put it over here, you get a lot of rapping, is what you get. But that's the way he liked it. I'm guessing because he wanted to see more board and less chat. Because to him, the chat wasn't as useful to him. Now, in theory, if the one thing that the reason why he did that was, he really didn't care about there's one thing that happens in the chat room at the moment, which is all the announcements. You announce, it announces, oh, this piece was added. It announces this guy changed speed. It announces, someone came into the room, someone left the room. Things like that, which the question is, do people want all those notifications? Is that why he set it up that way? Because in theory, you would love to have it so that there was no notifications whatsoever when it comes to like adding pieces to the board or turning, or the piece on the board turned, or he sideslipped, or whatever. I don't know. I obviously, that's one thing I probably should do is, and I will look into doing, which is create a survey, probably a Survey Monkey. That's probably what I'll do, and send it out and probably post it up on different places so that I can get some feedback. Now, the toughest part about surveys, obviously, is just plain simple. What do you ask? And like any survey, it's becoming, the presidential thing, the voting and all. And I was just thinking about the polls. Because I hear about these polls, this person's the lead, this person, is the lead, depending upon the poll. And I'm always curious. I'm deathly curious about what is the question that they're asking. What are the questions that they're asking? Are the questions that they're asking leading questions? I.e., are they asked in such a way in which the answers that they want to a yes to are kind of being pointed out to them, because, it's frustrating because I see these polls, I see these surveys, and I just, it's like, okay, guys, that's great and all. Show me what the questions were so I can evaluate what were the answers given. And then from there, I can then say, okay, was the survey biased in the answers it was looking for? Because obviously, I'm sure everyone knows about some of the polls, because some of the polls are more democratic, lean towards the Democratic Party, and other ones lean towards the Republican Party. And that's, in my guess, it comes down to the questions asked on the poll. Because if you say, for example, do you consider yourself a patriotic person? Now, that's a leading question in my mind. Well, maybe not that leading, but the idea, idea is that that will trigger certain thoughts in your mind. You know, because who doesn't want to be considered a patriotic person, a person who loves their country? Now, I can understand in some cases when it comes to America, some people not definitely appreciating our country, because depends upon that's that. See, I'm gonna mention this real quick and then I'll move on. Like the whole thing with the flag. Different people, the flag means different things. For me, it has a special meaning. The Star Spangled Banner has a very special meaning to me. The reason why it's a special meaning to me is because of I grew up around Baltimore. I've been to Fort McHenry. I understand what those words that were said in that poem, because it was a poem first, by Francis Scott Key, what he said and what they meant and what that really said. Bombs bursting air. What were the British doing? They had these cannonballs filled with explosives. And basically, they were, you know, firing them over Fort McHenry, and then the idea was to explode them and have shrapnel and killing a lot of guys, a lot of men, as many as possible. So, you know, bombs bursting in air, that is frightening. That these guys in Fort McHenry are trying to protect the port of Baltimore from the British fleet. And you got these bombs bursting in air that they're trying to kill you, you know. So, as to me, maybe it's because I did many tours of Fort McHenry. That Fort McHenry has a very special meaning to me, and of course, therefore, you know, because that's where Francis Scott Key, you know, he was on a boat. He was in a, sorry, not boat ship, a British ship. That was bombing as part of the bombardment of Fort McHenry. And that's when that song, that poem was written. So that's some special meaning to me. Because I understand the history behind that poem that was written. You know? So that, and, you know, that has some special meaning to me. Now, some other people, you know, that means something else. That means something that the government or this country. And to that regard, you know, I can agree that, you know, the people of this country can be very awful, you know, and the whole and society of this country, yeah. Do we have some unintended bias, especially when it comes to white people? Yeah, against blacks? Yeah, I'm sorry, you know, I'm doing my best to recognize that. You know, in my own personal life, you know, so, but, you know, there's only so much I can do. But anyhow, moving forward. So getting back to the actual topic of Canada, hopefully I didn't lose too many people with going off on that tangent. But anyhow, the idea is going to be to figure out what, you know, the send out a survey, which is not looking for certain answers, that would be unbiased in those questions, that I want to know the truth, the unvarnished truth with no biases. You know, I'm not sure if it can be unbiased, but I'll do my best. For example, obviously one of the questions is, you know, do you like having, you know, the current client, you know, or would you prefer that if the client was in the, if you basically used it, you know, to play the SFB online using the web browser, you know, things like that. Obviously, some of the functionality, you know, and I'd have to list some of the functionality that's currently in the client and say, you know, that you cannot live without, that kind of thing. Now, you know, and that's in my mind, that is hopefully will give a very unbiased answers, so I can at least give a feeling. I might not, you know, for all those, and of course there's, for that kind of thing, I'd also have to have a little thing that says other. Because invariably, I'm not going to mention every single feature that's part of the SAP Online Client. Because I can't. Because it would be a very, very, very long survey if I did that. And that's not an idea. Because Lord knows, I know for me, I'm not sure about you, but I hate it when someone asks me to do a survey and ends up taking me 15 minutes just to fill out a survey. I'm more than happy to fill out a two-minute survey, especially if it's some place which I feel strongly about. Now, I will have to agree, and I almost want to apologize for this, because Lord knows, I know that we, as a consumer, an internet consumer, have gotten so many emails saying, oh, can you rate us? You know, they'll ask you for maybe a quick survey. Can you please fill out the survey for it? And you know, I get tired of those surveys myself. For all those places I go to, they ask me for a survey, and it's like, I'll fill them out maybe 50% of the time. Depends, because Lord knows, you know, if I had a really good experience or a really bad experience, I'll be happy to share it then. If I have a mediocre experience, I'm probably less willing to give a response. Though in some cases, I'll do that anyway, just because I feel like I should. But there's a point where it's like, okay, guys, stop sending me a survey. For example, one of those people that keeps on sending me a survey is whenever I buy anything from Best Buy, if I ever went into the store, or even not in the store, if I buy something on the website, they send me a survey and just start asking me all these questions about my experience. It's like, people, stop sending me surveys. You know I fill out the surveys, but there's a point where I won't fill them out anymore. You know? So I don't want to be part of that, and I apologize for anyone who won't fill out my survey that I send out because of that it's just one more survey. I will definitely go through the survey myself. I will time it within reason because I'm a slow reader. So this will be an honest I'm hoping an honest look at the survey, you know, honest timing of the survey, because Lord knows, I had this one survey which I filled out. It said, oh, it'll take you 5 minutes. It took me 15 minutes. And it's like, I got one page, then another page, then another page. It never told me approximately how far into this process I was, which I don't like, because I don't know when it's going to end, which is good and bad. I think the reason why they did it is because it's good and bad. It's good in that, you know, if you think, oh, this is the last page, and you'll keep going. Versus, oh, this is the first page of 10 pages. After the first page, when you see that there's 10 pages to fill out, you might go, and not even attempt to start filling out the survey. But at the same time, if you have a half filled out survey, and those answers get tallied, the question are those valid or not? Because there's certain information that's probably in the back end of it that needs to be answered to make sense of what's in the front of it. So anyway, I'll make it a very short survey that I send out to people, and including the email list, posted on email lists, Facebook, discussion board, and hopefully get as much response back on that so I can get an idea of people who are interested in going web-based, because the great thing about, another one of the great things about the web-based is that I can take this. I can take what I've done with this, and I can put it, okay, you can't see it, I have it right here, which is on like an iPad or a tablet or even a Chromebook, because Lord knows Chromebooks are quite popular these days, which is, makes them very safe because they're just a Chrome browser is what they are. Now, the biggest issue with the Chrome browser is that it's taken a massive part of the market, and the problem I currently see with the way Google's now running the Chrome browser is they're becoming the de facto standard. It's like Internet Explorer all over again. And that's why TalkShoe, for the longest period, I don't even know if it's, I have not tried it with anything else but a Chromium-based browser at this point. And I still remember when I first, when TalkShoe redid their UI, I asked them, you know, I told them, oh, it's broken for Safari, it won't work. I said, oh, you have to use Chrome. It's like, point. Case in point. The developers developed in Chrome, so any features not available in Chrome, I'm only bad. I couldn't even use Firefox, which is another browser which is not as popular as Chrome, but I think it's more popular than Safari. So by they've become the de facto standard, so Google can doesn't even have to obey the standards anymore if they don't want to. They can add features and it won't matter anymore. You know, so that's what bugs me about Chrome being the main browser. Now, will I be developing under Chrome? No. Will I be testing it under Chrome? Well, I got to. I ain't got much choice there, do I? Since as is, I did a quick survey, a really quick survey, on the Starfleet Warlord group and on Facebook. I put out a survey. I gave a list of all of the browsers that I knew of, that, you know, within reason. Because, you know, I gave Internet Explorer. I gave, you know, all Chromium-based browsers like Brave. I think I said Brave explicitly. Chrome, Safari, you know, all these kind of browsers. And, you know, to see what kind of answers I got. And most of the people were using Chrome. Why? I have yet to figure that one out. And here's the reason why I say that. Chrome, in my experience, is a memory hog. I'm not sure you probably, I have not, you don't know how. Here, this is just the number of windows I currently have up in Safari. This is not the number of tabs. Multiply this by the number of tabs. Now I've got, not too many right now. I've got like 50 tabs up. But each tab in the Chrome browser, for me, takes half a gig of RAM. At least that's my previous experience. You know, now, do I have a Chromium-based browser? Right here. My Brave browser is Chromium-based. Because of TalkShoe requires it. But I didn't want to use Chrome, so I decided to use Brave because it has the most privacy-oriented features when it comes to Chromium-based browsers. So I definitely did not want to use Chrome itself, so I used Brave, which is it's a derivative, you know, because it's Chromium-based, which is the open-source project for Chrome. Just let you know, just in case you didn't know what that meant. But anyhow, so, you know, I got the speed chart. Obviously, that's going to be a requirement. Now, the question is, of course, is going to be UI. That's the one thing that I was thinking about today, which is the UI. Currently, the UI, you know, for SMB Online, yes, that is, for those of you who are watching the video feed, yes, that is the little Java guy from way back when. They still have them. I think it's called Duke. But anyhow, as you can see, you know, you've got all these tabs. See, nice impulse chart. I'm wondering if I might want to do it this way. Because currently I got the impulse chart doing, you know, every other, which is actually, for those of you who have saw the old impulse chart, that's what this looks like. Is this one. This one, you know, I like it. You know, that's the way I use it. But, you know, weapon status and opponent weapon status. Of course, you know, we can just right-click and we can add a piece. Now, for if you use a web-based browser, you can't do that. You might be able to do a long press. I have to double check to see what kind of mobile functionality is available. But, you know, do an add piece. This is, let's go. Give me a CAD. Let's add that. This CAD. Give me that plus refit. Because that's one of those things that's going to have to happen. Okay, adding ships. How do you bring it up? Don't know. Probably it's going to be like a div, you know. So it actually, it looks like a window, but it isn't a window. But anyhow, you know, and you got SSDs. Now, one of the things that, you know, this allows for is this, floating windows. So the SSD is a totally separate window. Now, the question is, when it comes to a web-based online client, would this functionality be available? You know? In theory, I could do it, but, you know, and have it so that you can actually have it so that you have the tabs for, you know, the whole idea of tabs across the top of the board for that, you know, when you're using touch base user interface, so you can go to the different places. Obviously, this is like logs. I don't think that's one of the things that would be part of the minimum viable product. Notes, not sure, probably not. Impulse chart, obviously, it's requirement. EA requirement. Expendables, that's going to be a requirement in my mind, because of maybe not storage to begin with, but definitely the ability to select what's going to be the loadout for your ship, what's going to be the loadout for your seeking weapons for a ship. Dang, I didn't realize it had so many. Well, it's a CAD. So it has 6 drone racks, 6 B drone racks, and 1 G drone rack, which is interesting. So, you know, developing it so that it can be a separate window is always complicated. And the question is, do I change the UI here? You know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of functionality here, like import, export, that might go away, you know, initially, it wouldn't be part of the minimum viable product. You know, right. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. And you could do all kinds of things, you know, relay SSD, you know, apply damage, all that kind of thing. But how would that work in the web base? You know, will we still have this drop down, or will we do something different? You know, what it would be? I don't think FleetView might be available. You know, probably not. But, you know, those little features that would not probably be available in a minimum viable product to start off with. But anyway, you know, the whole, most probably, you know, how much of the UI do I want to rethink? That's what it comes down to. Do I want to stay with the same basic UI? You know, obviously these menus go away in the web-based. But how do I duplicate that? You know, actually, you can have menus. There's ways of doing that. The question is, do we want them? And, you know, We can have it so that we have the tabs, possibly even the icons, and just have this whole window as something. Now, do we still have, you know, what I showed before, which is this guy, the game control window? Do you have it anymore? You know, or do you just have it so that this list now just shows up here on the side of the, you know, side of this, and you can just pop it out. You know, leave it there, or just have it so it's, you know, you can pop it out when you want, and then dismiss it when you don't want it. You know, things like that, which I think could be kind of cool. Now, obviously, the question, if it pops out, does it overlap this, or does it then make this scrollable, and then it just becomes a static area over here? That's one of those things that would have to be decided, you know, when it comes to the web-based UI, because this is a total redo. The way that the client looks does not have to be the same anymore. You know, I'm sure you've seen it. We can still have some of the keyboard functionality, so that you can go straight up, down, turn. You know, I'm doing that completely with the keyboard here, as you can see, because I wasn't clicking on it. But anyway, you know, that still can be the case. So we'll just have to wait and see about results of the survey, but also I have to think about how I want the web-based UI to go. Now, there's one other thing I wanted to show you before I wrapped up for the evening, and that is this guy. This is one that actually I worked on first, which is the third gen ships available in the browser. This is not a, okay, this stuff is not a picture. It is not. The only thing that's a picture in this whole thing is this, is the background. These are actually drawn within the browser itself. Now, I still have to, you know, work on functionality where, okay, click here, whatever, click, and then find what's that's related to that box, you know, the whole idea of editing the ship. You know, that's going to be kind of, that's a minimum viable product. That's kind of required, you know, things like that. But the reason why I wanted to show you this is that this is what the stuff, this is what can be done in the browser. Now, I'm sure a lot of you are going to look at that and going, you know, that's not impressive at all. And I agree, it's not impressive. But the reason why I implemented at all, and Lord knows it took me a while to do this because of what I had to do, was take the whole ship definition, work on the back end, basically that was all part of the client, which, you know, has all this code to loading it up, and then save it in a totally different format than it currently is saved in, and have it so that it can then be loaded in the browser. Now, currently I've hacked it a bit, which is that the whole ship definition is part of a JavaScript object. So it didn't actually load it per se from the server. It will. In the future, it will. But I just have to add the functionality of, okay, loading up the different ship definitions, because if I had done that, I probably would have done is had a little drop down here of all the different definitions that I've created. And the whole idea, I just wanted to show that it can be done. And the great thing about it is that the functionality is there in the web browser that you can do amazing things, which I'm sure you've seen already. If you're even, geez, how many years ago has it been? And I'm just thinking about Google Maps. Google Maps, when it first came out, was the most amazing thing ever to hit the internet. for those of you old enough, and my guess is most people listening to this podcast are old enough, you remember the bad old days, or the original days of the web. The whole idea of, it's kind of like my website to a certain degree. That is that form-based, you would enter in all this value, then you click the button, and then you'd bring up another web page. All of a sudden, you've got Google Maps come out, and it is an interactive web page. You can click on the map, and then you can click, and then you can drag. So you can drag this map all over the place. And so you actually get follow it. And the thing is, it's not loading up the whole map into your browser. It's loading pieces. And Lord knows, if you had slow enough internet access, you saw that. You saw the blocks, the different blocks of the map as it filled those in, as it downloaded them dynamically. Or obviously, if you got too far ahead, if you pulled down too quickly, it would take a little while to grab that data and have it so it actually would then stitch together the image in what you're looking at. And then, of course, then there's the metadata that's on top of all of that data, because I'm willing to bet you, because there's two ways of doing it. And I've done both ways when it comes to the client and the SIP definitions, and you've seen them both. Third-gen definitions. Third-gen definition, you've got a background image, in this case, the SIP. And then these boxes, those are actually drawn. Now, the second-gen SIPs, go back to here. The tournament. Let me add fed close. Now, oops, wrong one. Go here. Look at this. You can see the boxes, the classical boxes, the way it used to look for SFB. Now, I mean, honestly, I'm this kind of SSD is really growing on me. I'm sure, I know there's people who are used to this kind, and that's the way they like it. I agree that there's certain aspects that this does not show as well. For example, positions of the weapons. Now, in some cases, I think that can be resolved. Like, when it comes to the drone racks, we could actually add more drone B boxes. We could have like some down here, like one over here, a couple here, it's like two here, two here, two here. We could, in theory, that could be done to make it so it's more realistic when it comes to positioning of it. But I'm not sure about you, but I like this background. I think the background's beautiful. Now, moving onward, back to this. See, this whole thing is the graphic. And then when you damage it, those boxes are the only thing that's drawn. The damaged boxes are drawn. This positional information and how big the boxes are and all that kind of thing, that is not saved. That's not drawn. Because Lord knows, like, the text here, that's not drawn. That's part of the image. That would be even more difficult to do in my mind, because then I'd have to create my own font or have it so that I can get the font from ADB, because I know ADB uses a certain font for this, and I'm not sure what it's called. You can get fonts that are probably very close, but I don't know what it is. For all I know, it might be a commercial font, which then I'd have to pay for and license and all that kind of thing. But anyway, that doesn't matter. The point is that's the way it's done for this. Now, my guess is that with Google Maps, it could have done it one of two ways, which is either they're like the satellite image, obviously satellite image, there's nothing you can do. But the question is the rest of the map, when it comes to roads, when it comes to all the streets and so forth. And is that all the streets, are they all drawn? Or is it only that the position of those are drawn, and then you have an actual map itself? You know, which is a bit, you know, an image, you know, a static image. Okay. So that's just one of those behind the scenes kind of things I wonder about. But anyway, this is what I wanted to show you, some of the things that I've worked on when it comes to the web-based client. So to show you that, yes, there actually has been some progress. I need to put together all of the pieces. I've done some of the work. The one thing that I was actually working on earlier this week is the energy allocation definition. Because the actual form, there's actually a definition for the energy allocation form. I did the whole idea. What's called an energy allocation engine. You define the form. You say, okay, these are the variables for because each line has a separate variable. So then you can take that, and then you have to define what kind of row is that. Is it a calculated row? Is it an energy allocation row? Is it after energy allocation row? Because I like for notes. Definitely, you know about the energy allocation versus the calculated, because the calculated is like the ones that calculate up how much energy that you have. That's completely done via the engine, the energy allocation engine itself. It's not hard coded into the client itself. It's from this definition. This file defines what that formula is to, well, how it works. Now, is it super, super powerful? No. It's a very basic, almost could call it spreadsheet per se, but even that is pretty poor. The tough part is I don't think I can do a calculated value of a calculated value. I think I might be able to do that, as long as the one calculated value is above the calculated value, the other calculated value. But in any way, I want to show you, tell you that I actually have been show you some results of some of the work that I've done. It's because it's something that I've wanted to do for a long time. I started doing it, and I'm doing this old school at the moment for all you people who've done web-based UIs. And that is, I'm doing this really old school, guys. This is raw JavaScript, raw CSS. I'm not using I'm not using TypeScript or Elm or any of this other transpilers to convert it from that language into a JavaScript. I'm currently not doing that. Now, I might need to do that later on, when it comes to some of the features and making it easier to convert some of the code from Java to JavaScript. I might be, in some cases, I might, if I was going to do anything, I was thinking about using TypeScript at the moment. Obviously, there's a new one, which in theory I could look at, which is Kotlin. Kotlin. But that book is mainly targeting Android at the moment, but it does still teach you the Kotlin programming language. So I might do that, I might not. At the moment, I'm still working purely in raw JavaScript. The one thing that, see, there's one thing that I like doing that with. The reason why I like raw JavaScript at the moment, I like it because of it is lightweight. In my mind, that's the biggest boondoggle, the biggest issue with a lot of these JavaScript frameworks. All of a sudden, you're downloading a multi-megabyte JavaScript framework blob. And you're doing multiple of these for a single freaking web page. Which means it takes longer for that web page to load, to do anything. What's wrong with this picture, people? You know, I understand that a lot of those frameworks make it easier to develop. I will grant you that. But then it produces this awful experience. Now, obviously, that's why they come up with these things called minimizers, which then takes the JavaScript file and shrinks it, basically, is what it does. And the only reason I would want to use TypeScript at all is because of it, there's a lot of static, because it's using a transpiler, it can do static analysis of the code, meaning that it can make sure that the types that you're passing around are correct. That when you're expecting an integer to be passed in to this method, it's an integer. In JavaScript, plain JavaScript, an object's an object. It's totally and utterly dynamic. And that can shoot you in the foot. Because of, that's why they have all those unit tests. You know, that you can run this code with through unit tests, and which will then help test that functionality. Now, which is, unit tests are a really good idea. I agree there. But the great thing about having a compiler, even a transpiler, and having that static compilation step, what's wonderful about that is that it can at least verify the first step of the process without a single unit test. It can guarantee you that the types and the constants that are using are compatible with each other. You won't find something weird in runtime unless you do something weird at runtime. You can do that, but in some cases you lose that safety. And you know it. It's like the whole idea of Rust. For those of you who know anything about Rust, the whole concept of Rust is that when you have a object within that system, within that program, you know what the ownership is. Unlike C code, any number of structures or so forth can, quote unquote, have a reference to that. In Rust, only one person is allowed to modify an object at one time. It owns it, and it's the only one who can modify it. And in the meantime, you can't do anything with that object. And that's fine. That's what Rust is. It's to save you from doing something stupid inadvertently. You know, so that's why Rust is actually trusted more than other programming language when it comes to system level programming. And Lord knows, and I've seen some development for like embedded controllers in Rust, which those embedded controllers have to be solid. So in my mind, Rust is exactly the programming language to do it in. So because you have the ownership model, and the compiler will check your ownership to make sure that you didn't do something funky. Now, obviously, you can override that and say, this is going to be unsafe. I know it's unsafe, and I know that this can bite me in the butt, but you know, I know better than you. Now, do you want to do that all the time? No, you don't. If you go for unsafe a little too often, then you're violating, and it will bite you in the butt. Or you might have to, you really should be thinking about rethinking about how to solve that problem. So, for the little programming information there, and I apologize for those of you who are now just fell asleep. So wake up! So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.